egg is less deserving of funding or support, you know, and that if you go to Gallery A, it doesn't mean you can't go see it.
Hi, this is Mark Ruffalo, and you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra.
Wayfarm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wayfarm and our radio station, WGXC, operate and broadcast. The Mohicans named themselves the people of the waters that are never still, following their arrival along the Mohicanitta, the great ebb tide river, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For further information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
WGXZ underwriting support is provided in part by Crisafulli Brothers Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, Upstate New York's home services company since 1993. Red Carpet Service and Solutions. For more information, visit CRISBRO.com.
Wayfarm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Justin Luke in Brooklyn and Caro, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Welcome to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda. I'm Amanda.
I'm Jenny.
And we are a twice a month radio show here on WGXC where we talk about movies. We are both movie lovers, not professional movie critics, but that doesn't matter. We're the audience that movies are made for.
It's so true. So true.
We are every second and fourth Tuesday of the month from 7 to 8 p.m. And usually we pick a theme and then watch movies around that theme and then get on the airwaves to talk about them. Tonight, we don't have a theme. We're just going to talk about what we've been watching lately. And before we get into that, we're going to tell you about what's playing in the theaters around these parts. I'm going to start off and tell you about what's playing at the Wyndham Theater in Wyndham, New York. We have Arthur the King, oh. Kung Fu Panda 4.
Wow.
Big deal. And Dune Part 2. Also, another movie. Sorry, Cabrini.
Oh.
I don't know anything about that.
Me neither.
It says coming International Women's Day, which was
last week.
All right. So you can find out more about those movies and showtimes at WyndhamTheater.com. That's WindhamTheater.com.
All right. And now I am going to tell you about what's playing at the Crandall Theater over in Chatham. We have The Teacher's Lounge, Poor Things, Barbie, The Zone of Interest, 20 Days and Mariupol, Freud's Last Session, Oppenheimer, Bob Marley, One Love, and Hop. And if you're interested in any of those movies and their showtimes, you can head on over to CrandallTheater.org.
Amazing. I'm going to tell you now about what's playing at Time and Space Limited, or TSL, in Hudson, New York. There is a lot of movies here as usual, so we do recommend heading to their website, timeandspace.org, to look at their full calendar. But a snapshot of what's playing this week, we have Giuseppe Tornatore's Ennio. We have Ian Chaney's The Ark of Oblivion. David Bickerstaff's Painting the Modern Garden, Monet to Matisse. Wim Wenders' Perfect Days. I'm excited about that
one. Yeah, me too.
Wim Wenders' Anselm and Jonathan Glazer's Zone of Interest, as well as Matteo Garrone's Io Capitano. And, oh my gosh, we have more. Amos Poe's Unmade Beds. That's it.
Wow.
So check out more at timeandspace.org.
All right. And now we're going to head a little further south to the Upstate Films locations, starting with the Star Cinema, which is the location in Rhinebeck. So we have Perfect Days, Totem, The Taste of Things, Hundreds of Beavers, Io Capitano, The Monk and the Gun, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf with writer Philip Gefter, and Lionesses, How Football Came Home with director Poppy de Villeneuve. And then heading across the river to the Orpheum Theater, which is the location in Saugerties, we have Dune Part 2, Buster Keaton's The General with live soundtrack by Anvil Orchestra, Love Lies Bleeding,
oh
yeah, baby, Upstate Comedy Club, La La Land, RRR, Renaissance, a film by Beyonce, High Society, The Taste of Things, and American Fiction. And several of those films are part of the grand opening of The Mark, which is their new sound system over at the Upstate Films location in Saugerties. So if you're interested in any of those things, you should head over to upstatefilms.org and find out more. The Mark sounds like it's going to be really cool.
Very
I'm stoked.
Excited to check out The Mark.
Yeah, really stoked to go see RRR in like a crazy sound booth.
Yeah, I know, a movie I still have not seen. It's so embarrassing. All right, so I'm going to tell you last but not least about what's playing at the Spotlight Theater in Hudson. That's the 8-screen theater on Fairview Avenue. We have Cabrini, Imaginary, Kung Fu Panda 4, Dune Part 2, Ordinary Angels, Bob Marley, One Love. You can find out more by going to thespotlighttheaters.com and selecting the Hudson location from the drop-down menu.
Nice.
All right.
A lot of movies out still.
A lot of movies out still. Feels very exciting. Here we are at the theater in the full light of day.
Oh, exciting.
Which is wild.
Yeah, at the studio.
Yeah, sorry, what did I say?
You said the theater, which is also the feels accurate.
Yeah.
It's the theater of sound.
It is. It's the theater on the airwaves.
Absolutely.
No picture, just sound.
Just sound.
Yeah, it's wild to be here post daylight savings time. I am.
Oh, it's so exciting.
Still reeling.
Yeah.
Jenny, you and I watched most of the Oscars.
We did.
On Sunday.
It's true.
Do you want to talk about the Oscars before we talk about what we've been watching lately?
We should. We should. It's right. It's only right to do so, to talk about the biggest movie in biggest movie. Biggest night in movies. Biggest movie in movies.
Yeah. So the general, what I'm, as a person who just recently got a Twitter account and is not out there too much, mm-hmm. this was a great opportunity to use Twitter.
Oh, like it's other the people perfect. Use
it.
Yeah.
And I have gotten a general vibe from people that it was people liked the night.
Yes.
They liked the
this
show.
Is a better Oscars than usual, I would argue.
The host, Jimmy Kimmel, was like,
Fine.
Like just,
mediocre.
Yeah, which is better. Honestly, like our standards are so low when it comes to hosts that the fact that he didn't do too many bits was just fine.
Yep, totally.
John Cena's bit was funny.
Everyone loved that.
He came out on stage naked, covering his wiener with the card for the winner. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of great movies.
Yeah. I know. We talked about this last show when we talked about the Oscars.
Yeah.
And watching the ceremony really did feel like it, it's true. This was an exceptional year for movies, and an exceptional year also for movies being nominated at the Oscars.
Yeah.
Where ordinarily there are a bunch of stinkers in there where you're like, God, I hope that doesn't win.
Yeah.
And this year is kind of like, you know what? There are some wins that I didn't agree with, but it's like at the end of the day, they were all pretty much great movies.
Yeah. And there are certain things that I didn't think would get any attention that did. Like, I didn't think American Fiction was going to get any attention,
no,
but
it
got
great.
Best adapted screenplay,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. Which is huge.
Yeah. And that's really cool. So we got to hear from like a lot of directors and writers that I didn't think we'd get to hear from.
Absolutely.
Paul Giamatti cried.
Yep.
Ugh. When his co-star,
yes,
Divine One.
Love.
Also, I've been specifically wanting to bring up a couple of fun notes.
Oh, please.
Did you see the very cute cutaway of the dog, Messy, who played Snoop with the fake paws clapping?
Yes, I did. I was very lucky. I was watching the Oscars with some friends of the show who have been on the show before, Anne, Shannon, and Charlie. And we did, we tuned in about an hour late, but we were just in time to watch Messy clap his little paws.
Yeah. There's also pictures now revealed of the guy holding the fake paws under the seats, which is really good.
Yeah.
So also when they presented all of the Best Actor and Best Supporting Actor Actress Awards, they had former winners mention all the nominees and present them. I liked that. That was fun.
I thought it was really weird. I understand.
Tell me more.
I think as it went on, it became better. I missed the supporting actress, so I didn't see that part. I just saw supporting actor and then best actor and best actress. But it just felt like, I think some of them were more successful than others. It really depended largely on like what was written for the person speaking and also the person speaking it.
Yes.
Because the ones that were like, for example, Nicolas Cage's was great.
That's what I'm specifically thinking
of. His was so perfect because it was, if you didn't watch Nicolas Cage. So they brought out the like five past winners of the category to then each of them would compliment one of the current nominees.
Yeah.
And Nicolas Cage's was perfect because he was there to compliment Paul Giamatti. Yep. But they talked exclusively about craft and like the actual act of acting. Whereas some of the other ones were just like, you're just a great guy. You're just a really good person.
Yeah.
And it's like, you could just, it just felt really awkward because it's like, do they even know each other?
I know.
Please just talk about the craft. It just, that's the thing that made it feel very, like we were all like, are they about to propose marriage?
I know.
It feels like vows.
I can't help. I can't help but love Ki Huy Quan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What's the name of the actor from American Fiction?
Sterling K. Brown.
Yeah, talking about Sterling K. Brown and Sterling K. Brown mouthing from the audience being like, thank you, man.
Thank you, man.
No, you're the best.
It's true. That's true. And that
and
is...
Because just like that was so emotional last year, Ki Huy Quan winning.
So true.
And so anytime I get to see him, because he's clearly such a nice guy, I'm like, oh, nice guys talking about nice guys.
And it is a nice, it's a nice opportunity to bring back actors that we haven't seen in a while. Like there were some older actors who were able to kind of like come on and express feelings, which I do think is like ultimately is great.
It's why we come out.
I mean, it's true. Every year I'm like, I don't care about the Oscars, and I really don't, but also part of me is like, the magic of the movies does sweep you
that's
up
how they
arms.
Get you. So this year was notable for another reason, which is that they were very short.
Yeah,
and I was like,
so
how do they
short.
Feel so short? And it's because they took out a lot of those little videos they play in the interim that are like about, they did a very short in memoriam, but they'll usually do more specific ones, like clips from old Oscars. They'll really stretch it out with a lot of these little clips and stuff like that. And they didn't do those this year. So having the former winners come out felt like a little replacement of that. Like this like kind of cornball part of the Oscars that I roll my eyes out, but I'm also like, oh.
I mean, I guess for me, I'm kind of like, I like the clips because that is the stuff that does really stir me. Like, I like them
seeing, too. They're corny,
like, the
but
montages
I like
of old films. And, like, I do, like, we do come to this place for magic. Like, I do, I don't know. There's something about that that speaks to me more than, like, I would be fine if they cut out all the bits. Like, I don't need any bits.
Oh, and
I don't need
any jokes.
Music
performances either.
No, I don't need the music. Well, although the Barbie one was really good.
I did not care because I don't like Barbie. So like,
I mean,
I don't know.
I feel very neutral.
I mean, the Osage drumming was beautiful.
Yeah, totally.
Of course.
I feel neutral on Barbie, but I do feel like that performance in particular was very fun. Like, it felt very referential. Like, they do like the Busby Berkeley thing with like the big faces, and it's like, I just feel like that's the kind of thing that does feel really fun and like exciting. And like, I usually don't care about the music, like the. We learned in real time that there was a Flamin' Hot Cheetos movie this year when they sang the song about the fire inside. Do you know?
Oh, I guess, you know what? I guess I really tuned out during a lot of the songs.
There was, so, I mean, that's the only
I
song
knew
that
about
we were,
the movie, though.
Well, that we were like, what is this song for? Because my friend was like, is it for the Hunger Games? And I was like, this definitely is not in the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
And then we looked it up and it's for the movie that's about like the invention of Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
How'd that get in there?
No idea. And it's a song. I mean, it was written by the, I can't remember what her name is, but there's this woman who's been nominated 15 times and has never won.
Oh my God.
And my friend was like, she looks like Liza Minnelli. And they immediately cut to her and we saw her and we're like, wow, she does look like Liza Minnelli.
Whoa.
But it's like, yeah, it's this woman who's been nominated every year, but I guess doesn't usually win. But it just felt so comedic.
Yeah.
So I'm with you in some ways where I don't always need the songs, like often, especially like the sad ones. I'm like, whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I felt like the past winners presenting to the nominees was like a really nice idea, but it does need to be finessed a little bit.
Absolutely.
Because it felt so weird.
Yeah, it was. It felt very forced for sure.
Yeah.
And yeah, again, I also like when they play the clips because, mm-hmm. again, I find it all corny. And one of the reasons why I'm like, oh, I don't like the Oscars, but then I actually really do.
Yeah.
So we didn't get to have those.
Yeah.
Like, I'll never forget one year they played, maybe it was like the year that Charlie Chaplin died, or mm-hmm. they were just like nodding to Charlie Chaplin, or maybe it was the year that Robert Downey Jr.'s Chaplin mm-hmm. came out. But they played a clip of the last Oscar speech that he ever gave, mm-hmm. and he's so old, and it's such a sweet, moving speech,
yeah.
and I still think about that.
Yeah, dude. That's the magic.
That's the magic. So I did miss that, and then just this felt like their replacement, like let me tug at your little heartstrings, or try to, but it wasn't as special as
yeah totally clips. I did yeah I appreciated that it was shorter, but it did feel like it was over and then we're like, oh, there's yeah. like usually at least an hour and a half left of this.
Yeah,
like, it's
exactly.
crazy,
which I loved because I like to not be up super late.
It's
for
true.
Something like
it's
the
nice.
Oscars.
Yeah.
When Jenny mentions Nicolas Cage doing his thing specifically, like Jenny said, he was tasked with talking at Paul Giamatti about Paul
and talking
Giamatti.
At is really correct.
Because they were also all doing the thing where like they had to look at the person in the audience and then also look at the teleprompter slash camera.
Yeah.
So that part was really obvious yeah. and strange. But Nicolas Cage was like, Paul Giamatti wore a special contact to give him a lazy eye for the character for the whole thing. And people ask, would I do that? Heck yeah, I would.
It's just so cute.
It's
yeah.
just, yeah, yeah, it was great. And then I wanted to talk about the standing ovation for Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito coming out to present.
Incredible.
The twins.
The twins.
There was a standing ovation when they came out on stage together.
People love, I mean, that's when.
That was amazing.
They prepared us by being like, you know, a couple segments ahead of time, like for us, the viewers, saying like, and coming up soon, you know, the reunion, nobody expected, but everybody wanted. And we were like, who could it be? And then when they came out, we were like, oh, that is the reunion that nobody expected, but everybody wanted.
Yeah,
100%.
It's so good.
It was very charming.
I just like the excitement and shock of seeing them come out on stage, and then the further glee of just seeing everyone stand
it's like
and
really
clap.
Charming. It's just, you know, it's a real winner. Yeah.
Yeah. My only other notes or special things are Miyazaki not being there because mm-hmm. he's a class act.
Yeah, he is. Well, it's
because he gets it. He won for Boy and the Heron, which is great.
Yeah, incredible.
And I love that he wasn't there.
Yeah,
because they're, you know, of course they're like, he couldn't be here tonight, and it's like, no, he chose not.
He chose
to be there.
Not to. Because I saw a thing about how he chose not to attend the Oscars in the past because of the Iraq War.
Yeah,
and it's like, yeah, the man's a class act. He's famously anti-war.
Yeah,
like,
famously.
Yeah,
and which super smart and not about to put up with this dumb song and dance.
No, it was a real weird Oscars for a multitude of reasons, but definitely the undercurrent of nobody saying anything with like the
of
protests
course.
Going on outside.
Of course. Well, then the only person being Jonathan mm-hmm. Glazer, which is like, yes, you like more people should have said something, obviously, but he is the one person who absolutely has to say
yeah,
something.
Totally. He's getting a lot of pushback already, which is like really crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a bummer because, you know, the critique from our end of things is that it was like softball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, but at least it was something. It's
yeah.
the very like, you know, that's most of the critique from my end of things.
Yeah.
It's like, it's something.
He spoke at all. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
He spoke at all.
And it's like, it is truly, I mean, I do think it's a very brave gesture to take a stand in an industry that is like famous for blackballing people and like cutting them off for having any kind of spine, kind of, and like any political stance that is not the mainstream stance of the industry.
Exactly.
And yeah, truly, like, he is obviously representing a film which is about genocide.
Yeah.
And so it is like, you know,
he's have to say something.
He has to say something. And it is, it's, I mean, I did, we were all very impressed and found it moving, even though it was a little bit like, all right, you're equivocating a little bit, but I understand why he did, because he is now immediately getting a ton of backlash. Like, it's pretty crazy.
It's so sad.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, I don't know if I was like crunching a snack too loud in my ear, but like I missed the very first bit of his speech. Mm-hmm. So I tuned in when he mentioned October 7th and I was like, oh, of course, like you're like, gotta say both.
Yeah.
But then reread, you know, the beginning of it being like, we stand here as men who like, you know, don't stand for like our Jewishness being hijacked to excuse genocide.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's just beautifully put and perfectly put, and you know, much stronger of a stance than I initially thought he said.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I mean, that has been for the entire awards season, pretty much like he and the producer of Zone of Interest have been the only people really saying anything at any of the awards ceremonies, which is, oh boy.
Yeah. We had a lot of actors wearing Artists for Ceasefire pins. Mm-hmm. The actor who played the lawyer and the kid in Anatomy of a Fall.
Swan Arlode, my big new crush.
Yeah, also like like being a weirdly sexy man named Swan is just like a whole other thing. But yeah, they had Palestinian flag pins.
Yeah, totally.
So we had some...
It was a political Oscars.
Mild representation. Yeah. It was a political Oscars for sure.
Yeah.
The only other note that I had on my list was, I love whenever an effects team wins something.
Oh my
because
God.
Because a bunch of nerds get on stage. And I mean like a bunch of gothy, goofy special effects nerds get up on stage. The special effects team for Godzilla Minus One won the Oscar. They were all so excited. It's a big group of them. They all brought their own tiny Godzillas, including one that was painted gold.
Yes. Perfect.
And then they fumbled Stunning. With who to hold them while they had to hold their Oscars.
They didn't expect to win. They didn't think they were
going to win at all. Also, I don't know if you saw the picture of their shoes.
Yes. That's what I was like, did you see the shoes?
Because now I'm on X.com, dude.
I know. Congratulations. Welcome.
Yeah. I mean, barely, but I was that night. But they all wore kind of like little theater shoes, like little
some of them
pumps.
Are pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like the style of shoe, totally. Like they're all kind of like short,
like black,
short heeled pumps. And the heel on all of them is Godzilla's claw.
Like grasping the heel of the shoe. It rules.
So good.
It's so cool. I love that like commitment. It was really special. That was one of the big, I mean, this is always a problem at the Oscars where they really do not prioritize giving time to non-English speakers.
Yep. That was really,
really frustrating. They started playing like the special effects team were giving their speech and reading a prepared speech in English, but obviously English is not their first language.
Yep.
And so the music starts playing them off and it's like, let them speak. Like, this is their time.
Because they also had a framed photo of somebody on stage, and I don't know who
was. Somebody who passed away during the production of it, which is like, let them talk about that. Oh my God.
Yeah. It's so annoying.
Yeah. Or like we're talking about this too. We're like, Bad Bunny did this last year too, where he speaks in Spanish and it's just translated.
Yeah.
And it's like, let them speak in Japanese and then have it be translated. Like,
it's
that's fine.
Not that hard.
Yeah.
Like, we put live graphics on freaking football games.
Right.
Like, you can.
It's so easy.
You can do that.
Let them do it.
You know that you have a Japanese speaking team that are nominees.
Right.
Like,
totally.
You can prepare for this.
Right. It's like, are you not prepared for like the international film section either?
Yeah.
It feels, I mean, as always, I think about that quote that Bong Joon-ho gave a couple of years ago when he won for Parasite, where he was like, you guys are gonna like a lot more movies once you get over the hurdle of like reading very small subtitles. Like, there's a whole world that's gonna open to you.
It's just gonna blow your noggins. So those are all my Oscar notes.
Yeah. I would say I do feel we should also mention the Lily Gladstone snub.
Oh, absolutely.
The snub of the
night. Absolutely. Those are my like fun notes.
Yeah, the fun notes.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah. So for best actress, everyone expected Lily Gladstone to win.
From Killers of the Flower Moon.
From Killers of the Flower Moon. Lily Gladstone was not the selected winner. It was Emma Stone for Poor Things. Now, on our last show, Jenny talked about their theory, which proves to be very true, of actors who win for Academy Awards are often the actors who don't necessarily do the most like keyed in jaw performance, mm-hmm. but do the wildest most.
Yeah. The Oscars reward do not necessarily reward subtlety.
Yes, yes.
They reward big actions, big moves.
Yeah, and so that really rings true Emma Stone winning. It was clearly a shock to her.
Yeah, I know. She looked really upset.
So in some ways, I appreciated her speech because it felt very genuine mm-hmm. and very alarmed. And she mentioned how that award belongs to all the other nominees, mm-hmm. and she specifically named Lily.
Yeah.
But real bummer.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. Like, it was interesting to see yet again a move made by the Oscars where they, like, attempt to predict something. Like, they changed the order so that Best Actress came later in the night because they were like, okay, this is going to be, like, the big exciting monumental historic award mm-hmm. when it's granted to Lily Gladstone, but that didn't happen, which is the same thing that they did with Chadwick Boseman a couple of years ago where they made that the final award of the night.
Yeah.
I don't know if you'll recall, it was like after he passed away, everyone expected him to win Best Actor.
Oh, that's right.
And they made it the last award of the night, and Anthony Hopkins did not attend the show because he was like, I'm not going to win.
Yeah.
And then he won. And they had rearranged the entire Oscars because they were like, cool, this is going to be like a great note to end on. Chadwick Boseman's going to win. It's going to be like the posthumous, like, historic moment. But then he didn't win. And Anthony Hopkins won. And he was like, I'm at home in my pajamas. Like,
yeah.
What the heck?
I'm an old man.
Yeah. And it's like, it is fascinating because it feels like such a rigged thing, but it isn't actually. It is like very much in the hands of voters, and they don't always go the way that we think they're going to. So like you can predict it as much as you want, but
truly a shock.
It's crazy out there. Yeah. Really, I mean, there were some exciting surprises, some obviously disappointing surprises this year, but for example, the Zone of Interest winning sound was like thrilling, totally unexpected.
Which was like what we hoped for, but didn't expect to
happen.
Everyone
thought Oppenheimer would win. Yeah, it's such an exciting. You know, the Oscars are whack,
but
they're not rigged, so it's pretty exciting.
I wasn't sure that Zone of Interest would win for international feature either.
I
guess I thought Anatomy of a Fall, maybe. I'm not sure.
Was that nominated? I don't think that was nominated for international.
Okay.
I think it just got Best Picture and Writing, but maybe I'm wrong about that. But yeah, it did. It felt like I was not expecting it to win anything. I thought it was one of those ones where like we nod to it, but we don't actually award it because it's a little too toothsome.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, also somewhat even more disappointing is the combined total snubbing of Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah, nothing.
Like,
not a single award.
Absolutely nothing.
Insane.
Obviously, specifically Lily Gladstone not winning, but just it not getting anything at all.
They don't love Marty in the Academy, which is so crazy.
Yeah.
One of our finest filmmakers.
Because then all those years ago, they just like flopped him an award
For The Departed,
yeah. Which like is a fun movie, but by far not his best.
Yeah, it feels, I mean, it does really feel like he is constantly being snubbed by the Oscars. Like, I do think he's
what,
like,
what did he do to somebody?
I think his films are too biting. I think they are just like even you know
bad whiteies,
right?
White people.
We talk about Killers of the Flower Moon being like a movie for white people, and like it is, but it is also like it is about this like incredibly dark period in American history, and like although the FBI in the end is the heroic team, like It does not pull any punches.
Yeah.
And it feels like that is not Oscar fodder.
No, they want Green Book stuff.
They do. And I do also feel like I would not be surprised if a lot of Oscar voters didn't even watch it because it's so long and like has that reputation.
That is another thing. And I know we talked about on our last show when we talked about the Oscars, is wondering how that would affect it because it is so long. And that's the reason why a lot of people I know who do want to see it and aren't Academy voters, yeah. but like, you know, what's kept it off of their to-do list or like, you know,
yeah,
kept
totally.
Them from watching it until later is that it's so long.
It's the length. Which is a shame because it is one of those movies that's long, but does like the editing's incredible and it moves at a clip.
It moves so quickly.
Yeah.
I'm glad at least that Lily Gladstone has won a bunch of other awards in the award season.
Yeah. And I do also think like this heralds a, you know, like she's been already cast in a couple of other films in the, in the lead role. So it's like, okay, cool. Like she's, her career is kind of like set. She's ready to go. She will keep making more movies. And, you know, it's always a nice reminder that like, cause we do get swept up in the magic. The Oscars are fake and they're whack and they're stupid, even though they are fun and we have a good time watching them. Yeah. It's like,
kind of cool that Leonardo DiCaprio wasn't nominated for anything.
Yeah, and he like put all of his weight behind her campaign.
Really?
Yeah, totally.
All right, man.
Yeah, that's why. Like
for somebody who went from the PUSSY posse to the now I think he calls his friend group the Wolf Pack,
which is also really embarrassing.
It's like all so embarrassing. But I'm glad that he like kind of keeps that debauchery to his personal life and then professionally seemingly like is chill.
Yeah, totally. Maybe? I mean, the thing is that like he seems like kind of a whack dude, but his I also always think about whenever I'm like, you know what? I don't think he's probably like a very good person.
No.
But when he did win his Oscar for whatchamacallit, The Revenant,
yeah.
he like spoke about environmentalism. Like that's his thing, is like he has his campaigns and he's like, I will use my platform for good.
Yeah.
And I gotta respect it.
Yeah, I do too. I know. It's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I didn't realize that he
he like threw his weight behind Lily Gladstone's campaign. Yeah, which
that's
is like
great.
Pretty tight. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's the
Oscars.
That's a wrap on the Oscars 2024. Yep. Oh yeah.
Pretty thrilling.
Wow, I didn't even really think about Marty too intense.
Yeah. Marty too dark.
Marty
the Academy.
Too dark
they
for
can't
them.
Take it. They can't handle it.
They don't like thinking about bad guys.
Yeah, totally. he's not anodyne enough for them, which is like that's why we love him.
Wild.
Yeah. But it was a fun watch. Every year I do. Every year I'm like, I don't care about the Oscars. Then we put it on and I'm like,
I do love
movies though.
Especially this one was particularly redeeming because it was short for me and like the stage looked good.
Yeah, totally.
It went at a good pace. And there's definitely been past years where I tune in and I'm like, oh, this is taking forever. Like the host is particularly terrible, and
it's like move it along. I really don't need the bits.
Oh, I know.
I don't need the bits. It's always the worst.
It really is. And thankfully, Jimmy Kimmel kept them few and far between and short.
I hear I missed all the worst ones because they were at the beginning. So it's like I'm so lucky.
I also missed maybe the first 40 minutes.
But yeah, that's the old Oscars. Can't wait to find out who's going to win next year. Ooh.
Yeah.
Dune 2.
Yeah. Dune 2. Speaking of movies that are long, we're going to talk about Dune 2. Jenny and I went to see Dune 2 last week on Dune Tuesday. and we liked it.
We won't say too much because it is fresh,
new,
although I'm sure many people have already seen it. I would upgrade what you said to I loved it.
Yeah, Jenny loved it. Famously, I had a hard time with the first part. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of factors there. I had just finished reading the book and I have a hard time like turning that part of my brain off when I'm absorbing adaptations. But I also... I rewatched it before I saw part two and it's so confusing to me part one because I love to look at it, but I don't like it.
You know,
it's really confusing.
Just the way it goes.
Cause it looks amazing, but I just don't think it's great. And then the second one, I was actually talking to Tom Rowe.
Oh, nice.
The man who runs this wonderful station.
Thank you to Tom.
About Dune 1 and 2,
the dunes,
and he hasn't seen the second one yet, but he agreed, like he didn't like part one, and he was like, there was just no levity or any jokes in it. And I'm like, well
I've got great news
for you about part two, because that's like part two, I was able to depart from my nitpickiness about how it is as an adaptation, and that it, the movie itself was able to depart from trying to be a more faithful adaptation in order to create a better movie experience. Mm-hmm. And also one that kind of ushers in the important information about the Dune series as it continues mm-hmm. to the audience.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was really fun.
Yeah.
It was
a lot of fun.
It's
so fun. I just love big stuff in space.
I love big stuff
on planet. It's all it takes for me.
Yeah. And you know, it's really annoying how badly that can go sometimes. Because mm-hmm. you know, just like with disaster movies, I'll watch all the new stuff I can.
Yeah.
I'm like, is there a lot of money in it?
Absolutely.
Is it new?
I'll be coming.
I'm watching
to the theater.
I am there. But sometimes it goes so poorly. Mm-hmm. Like we've watched and talked about so many high budget sci-fi movies that are like so boring.
So terrible.
Somehow.
Yeah.
This is not boring at all. It's so fun. And it is just like the first one, an excellent viewing experience. Mm-hmm. As you know, my like gripe that doesn't take away from my enjoyment of it is that I always want them to do more.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of aesthetics that are a little safe mm-hmm. for me. I'm like, you know, and I get that they won't go wild because they're trying to like make it for everyone and not just the weirdos. But yeah, you know how I feel about how the Harkonnens are look.
Mm-hmm. They yeah, totally
look very high fashion to
yeah.
me, and I want something stranger.
Yeah, totally
more colorful.
Yeah. I mean, they're incredibly black and white.
Yeah,
literally.
I like the black and white yeah. planet, like you yeah. said. That's very fun.
But yeah, they do. We talked about this a little bit right after we watched it. The Harkonnens have a real the engineers vibe from Prometheus.
Exactly. And like all of them. And I'm like, so are they,
is this like
a
genetic
people?
Yeah, totally. Which is like, it's an interesting choice, which like to me, one of the things I love about Dune, because I know nothing. I mean, it does make me want to read the books, which is like a pretty exciting prospect.
Yeah.
I always love when a movie makes me feel that way instead of like leaving me like, I've had enough.
Yeah. Like I'm good with just the movie.
Yeah. Like watching it made me be like, more. I want more.
Right.
But one of the many things I really love about both Dune 1 and Dune 2, these adaptations, are that there's a lot of things in it that aren't explained, but like it feels like a developed enough world that I don't care.
Yeah.
Like I don't know who those weird guys are in the arena, and I don't know, like
yeah.
from Dune 1 there's like that weird spider thing.
Yeah.
Also,
and that's what I want more of.
But I do feel like I it would be great if there's more, but honestly, like I feel really satisfied by what I'm yeah. given as a person who has zero expectations.
Like those
you know?
Are the things that I mean where I'm like, I love those, like those weird mm-hmm. guys yeah in the fighting arena. More
yeah but even
make me be like, what the heck is that, and don't tell me
stuff
and make me say that more.
But I mean, like I extend that to, because I don't know anything, like the Harkonnens all do look really weird, and like they have a really similar visual vibe, and it's like, is that created somewhere? Is it a genetic thing? Is this a choice? I don't know, but I don't really care because I'm having such a good time.
I just wanted to be weirder.
Yeah.
That's my thing.
No,
it's like,
I
it's
totally
like more,
respect
more,
that.
Yeah. more.
I do. I'm with you, because that is usually my critique of basically everything, is that I'm like, this could be weirder.
Yeah.
But Dune really satisfies it for me as yeah. a person who like has zero expectations.
Well, that's like, and I've said this, I think I said this to you too, like after we saw it, is that's the fun thing about those books mm-hmm. is like, as far as to my memory, as far as physicalities of how people look or how mm-hmm. they dress, there's not too much specific description.
Right.
So when you make an adaptation of it, you can go wild.
Yeah, totally.
Which
you can
is
go pretty
really
kinky.
Fun. It's like when people put on like plays of Shakespeare mm-hmm. movies
and they
set
it a lot.
They
yeah.
like set it in any time, you
totally.
Know, like stuff like that, where it's like you can. You know, there are a little bit of physical description about mm-hmm. like how Lady Jessica looks and how Paul looks
right.
and whatever. But, you know, as far as how people dress and how like ships look, like,
yeah, totally.
Well, no, mm-hmm. I mean, that's the one thing about the Dune movies that's amazing, is the Thopters look exactly.
Oh, they look so good.
Like how I imagine
yeah.
them in the book. And that's always a thrill. But anyways, that's it. I'm just like, make it weirder, but otherwise no notes.
Yeah.
Great
totally.
Time.
So fun.
Great time.
So fun.
Also, I feel like people, this is a generalization mm-hmm. and an assumption, but people are like really into Dune after this part mm-hmm. two. Like part one, I feel like did not make the same waves that part two did. And now I'm seeing like videos of people with Muad'Dib vanity plates.
Yeah, I mean, I think that like people really did enjoy Dune 1, myself included. But I do think like the expectations set by that and then met and exceeded by Dune Part 2 really did like kind of ignite this fire within people where like I too am like, I love Dune. And like after I watched the first one, I was kind of like, yeah, maybe I'll read them. But after this one, I'm like, I'm reading them. Yeah. I'm reading them right now. Yeah. Like, I'm ready to go.
And there's... I mean, again, to talk about the little like touches of humor and stuff in the second one, it's more accessible.
Yeah,
like
that's
true. It's definitely not that the first one isn't, but the first one takes itself a lot more seriously mm-hmm. and is a little more dour.
Yeah.
And this one, yeah, it has a certain amount of levity to it that
jokes.
I feel like makes it more accessible.
Yeah, totally. Oh, God, it's so fun. God, I love Dune.
Yeah. And more action. It has more action in it. Totally. And that makes a movie more accessible mm-hmm. and more appealing to a wide audience.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, I mean, I think that is always
a great time.
Yeah. That is always the curse of adapting a series that's really complex, is that like you have to do a lot of building in part one, and then you can do a lot of payoff in part two.
Yeah.
And then ongoing, and then, you know, more additional building in part two that will presumably be paid off later. Like it's really hard to do a complete story when it's just a segment of a story. But that's a thing that I always really liked about the first Dune, is that even though it does end, you know, I mean, it feels like sort of an incomplete movie, it does feel very satisfying by the end to me, a person who has no expectations.
It ends where the book ends, like the first one, because the first book is cut into two parts.
Right, totally.
So it ends where it should in the first one, or like, not should, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, like, as an inappropriate adaptation. Yeah. But yeah, that was our time. We did not get the popcorn bucket.
We didn't. That's only at AMC theaters.
Not available to us.
I did eat so much popcorn and candy and theater nachos that I felt so sick.
Oh my God. It gave me so much power.
And it didn't fly by for me, the movie. Like, I still enjoyed it, but Killers of the Flower Moon went faster.
That's interesting.
There was like a little portion of Dune where I was like,
wow,
getting a little sleepy.
Strong. I had exactly the opposite experience. Like, I loved Killers of the Flower Moon, and it didn't drag, but I definitely was like, ooh, I bet we're in hour two now. Whereas Dune, when it ended, I was like, has it really been 2.5 hours? Could that possibly be true? How could that possibly be true?
I don't know if it's because my tummy hurt or not.
Yeah, I mean, that does always make a big difference. But that's our experience. If you're into it, it's out there.
It's still in the theater.
It's still in the theater. I'm sure it'll be there for a while.
So we got time to talk more about what we've been watching lately. Yeah. Jenny, do you want to tell me about what you...
I'll tell you.
What?
I watched a fresh new brand new movie that just came out. I know. Crazy. I watched Lisa Frankenstein.
Oh my God. Was it fun?
I really liked Lisa Frankenstein. It's getting like kind of dunked reviews. Like, people are not caring for it. My assumption about that is that it is not for everybody. It's a movie that's definitely not for everybody. I think that Lisa Frankenstein is going to be a cult classic in exactly 5 years.
Because it's like an 80s nod.
It's an 80s nod.
Like, it's like very much,
it's very
meant to be that. Like, it has neon font.
Mm-hmm. It is. And it's like it takes place in the 80s. Everybody has like crazy, like the 80s outfits, the 80s looks. It is a movie about a young girl. She's a senior in high school. Named Lisa. Mm-hmm. Her name is Lisa Swallows. And she is in,
oh my God.
And she is like a kind of a goth girl. Like, she's very quiet. She's very emo. Like, she doesn't really talk to anybody. And she's really obsessed with this one gravestone in the cemetery that's got like a really cute bust of like a young guy who died when he was also a teenager. And like, she doesn't have a lot of friends. She's like very, you know, she's very much like the weird one at school. And it takes place firmly in the 80s. The main character is played by Catherine Newton, who you might remember from Freaky or The Society.
Oh, yes. I remember her.
I love her.
From both.
I'm a big Catherine Newton fan. I know she's really
great.
Cute.
Yeah. She's great.
She's really funny.
And both of those things are so fun.
Yeah. So she Part of the reason that she is kind of a loner is that 2 years ago, her mother was killed in a home invasion, and everyone's like, she's really weird because of that horrible thing that happened to her.
Dead. Yeah, it's such a teen like, movie classic. Totally. Where they're like, God, you've been such a pill since your mom died.
Right, exactly. And so her father has remarried this kind of incredibly annoying woman played by Carla Gugino, who like you would also recognize because she's in 1 million movies.
She's the mom from Spy Kids.
Yes, precisely. Yeah. She's also a babe.
Yeah, she's super bad.
But so she, that's like her kind of almost like her evil stepmother type of trope. And then she has like a very cute like cheerleader stepsister.
Yeah.
So it's about her kind of, you know, being this loner teenager. And then one night she goes to a party with her cheerleader stepsister and is given a drink that has been laced with some drugs and, you know, has the experience of like, you know, almost getting groped by somebody and then like goes home and she's really furious, but she's still kind of out of it. And at the exact same time as she gets really, really angry about what has just almost happened to her, she punches and breaks a mirror and a crazy lightning strike happens outside at the cemetery. And she just goes to sleep. She has like, she's very, it has like a really 80s Tim Burton feel where like she's super like dreamy. Like she's fantasizing about like being in love with this dead guy who's like, you know, she doesn't know who he is. She just knows about his gravestone. So she has like this, these fun like dream sequences about being with him. And then the next night she's home alone and what should happen? But another home invasion. But this time, it's the corpse of the guy who she's always had a crush on. Yes. And who is he played by? Cole Sprouse.
Cole Sprouse. So cute.
Yes. So cute. And so it's like, it's a really fun movie. It is. It's written by Diablo Cody, who wrote Jennifer's Body.
And Juno.
And Juno. And it has such a Juno and Jennifer's Body vibe. Like, it feels like a movie. If you told me that it was made in 2004, I would 100% believe you.
Yeah.
Which is part of what's really fun about it, is that it does feel like a movie that we don't really get anymore. I know we talk about that a lot on this show. So it's like,
but
it turns out we are getting those
what
movies.
What we're looking for. We are getting them. But used
just
to,
a little bit.
Like, every movie used
it's
to
true.
Be like that.
It's true. But so it's really, the thing about Lisa Frankenstein is that, like, it's not, like, there are definitely problems with it. Like, it's a little bit too long. The pacing and editing are really weird. Like, there's some scenes where I'm like, why were these edited together this way? Like, which is not usually something I think about unless it's like, unless it's really well edited, then I'm like, wow, how did they edit that so well? Like, this is one where, especially like coming off the tail of watching a bunch of Oscar movies, where you're like wow, what happened here? Yeah. And it could like easily lose like 15, 20 minutes. And it's only an hour and 40, but I'm like, it's too long. Like, there were parts where I was kind of like spacing out and I was like, this, what are we still doing? Like, I know that the guy breaking in is the guy who's dead. Like, we don't have to do this whole rigmarole.
Yeah, let's just go.
But it's really fun. Like, that vibe is so unique. Like, that aesthetic and particular like gothy girl like who's a total loner, like you really don't see that as much. And there's something about like Catherine Newton's performance is really funny, and it's like really over the top in a way that's really charming. And yeah, it's like, it's pretty gross and weird, and like I won't spoil too much, but you know, Cole Sprouse's character needs some body parts. Yeah. He's missing some parts, and they have a handful of people that they really don't like.
And perfect.
They've got some perfectly working body parts on
that's
them.
What I was hoping that
yeah,
movie
it's really out. It's a really
the Frankenstein
fun,
part I
it's
hope.
Got the Frankenstein role. Yeah, it's very fun. I like, yeah, I would definitely not call it like an excellent movie, but I do think it's the kind that I could really imagine myself being like in 2 or 3 years being like, I want to watch Lisa Frankenstein again. It's so fun. Yeah.
I know, I just wrote down another theme because it made me think of Dead Boyfriends. It's a really
oh, Dead
good
Boyfriends
theme.
Is such a good theme.
Because you have
theme.
Things like Ghost.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, there's a couple, oh my God, there's another 80s Dead Boyfriend one. Like, I think it's called My Boyfriend's Back. Yeah. And it's about bringing your boyfriend back from the
that
dead.
Rules.
Right?
Yeah,
that's such a good
so
name.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a couple. My Demon Lover.
Totally. It's like one of those ones where there's not that many, but the ones that are, it's just a great trope.
They're
I
there.
Love
I mean,
my
like,
dead boyfriend.
Nietzsche Black is
yeah.
maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's not alive.
All right. So I watched one movie.
Yeah, tell me.
Because we initially had a theme set up for this show. So I watched one movie for that theme.
Oh, you did.
And I'm really happy I did because it's been on my list for a long time. You've seen it. Many people have. I finally watched the Safdie Brothers' Good Time.
Oh, yeah.
That
Not
movie
a good time.
is so good.
It's so good. It's an incredible movie.
And yes, it's really anxious. It was Saturday, mm-hmm. and I had started it on Friday night. And
crazy to not finish that movie once you start.
I know it is crazy, but I had been cleaning all day and I got myself into a cleaning frenzy.
Oh, totally.
And I was already anxious because I was just like, there's so much to clean, and then I had to stop and eat dinner and mm-hmm. finish the movie, and then I just felt more anxious, and then went out and socialized, which felt crazy.
Oh my god
But
you're a super person.
So Good Time stars Robert Pattinson and Benny Safdie as brothers who live in, it's New York City, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah.
And Benny Safdie is Nick. Their names are Nick and mm-hmm. Connie. Yeah. So Benny Safdie plays Nick, who is mentally challenged, and he's kind of under the thumb of his brother, Connie, who does care a lot for him, but does use him to pull off a bank robbery. And Nick gets caught when they're being chased and goes to jail. And Connie spends the rest of the movie continuing to hurt people to try to fix his mistake. He's hurt his brother. Mm-hmm. He obviously feels bad about it, but continues to inflict so much pain on people around him until... finally at the end. It's such a wonderfully simple story. It feels very complicated because mm-hmm. so much happens and it moves at such a quick pace, but overall it's such a beautifully simple story because finally Connie redeems himself by getting caught. He doesn't mean to get caught, but he gets caught. Off screen we understand that Connie has been like, yes, it was just me who mm-hmm. orchestrated this bank robbery, not my brother. Nick, his brother, is released from jail and goes into what we assume to be like either a school or a program,
like,
or a
living.
Home. Assisted living with other people with mental disabilities. And like, he finally gets to be in a very safe mm-hmm. and caring and like gentle environment instead of, he's clearly come from a very rough home.
Yeah, totally.
And so it actually has a happy ending.
Yeah.
That's very sweet and very sad too.
Totally.
But it's such a, like, after holding your breath for most of the mm-hmm. movie, you finally at the very end credits get to breathe out.
It's like an incredible high wire act that they do with that movie, because it's so incredibly stressful. And like, the only reason that it works, I mean, it's not the only reason that it works, but like, because the ending isn't truly awful mm-hmm. is like the only way that you can kind of like leave it not feeling so sick.
Exactly.
But it's great. There's scenes from that movie that I still think about all the time.
Robert Pattinson, Connie, is a bad person.
He's so destructive. It's so crazy.
And I know people commit crimes for a myriad of reasons, and mostly out of just basic human need in a messed up world where we don't get our needs met. But boy, oh boy, does the man know how to use a person.
Yeah, for real. It's like, it's pretty incredible. I mean, he's a great actor.
He really
he's
is.
He's a great actor.
He really is.
One of our finest.
How do you feel about Benny Safdie playing somebody who's mentally handicapped?
It doesn't feel good. I didn't know it at the time when I saw it.
Yeah.
When I watched it, I did not have that knowledge. And so I didn't think about it at all during it. And then it didn't really color my perception of it.
Yeah.
In retrospect, I think that I understand why you would choose not to, as a like, it could feel maybe exploitative in some ways.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it does really feel like a relic of an older time to have a non-disabled person play a disabled person in that way, where it does, like, obviously we have a lot of historic performances that were awarded at the time. And we're like, wow, isn't it incredible?
This is what it takes to be a good actor, is to play a role like this.
And it just, it feels pretty gross, because we do, at this point in time, like, there are a lot of actors of, like, you know, who have multiple kinds of disabilities who would be able to perform that role.
Yes.
And so, like, that's, I mean, it's the same way I feel about fat suits, where it's like, it's actually, I do think it's evil.
Yeah.
Just, I think it's like a pretty, like, there are, and for a movie like Good Time, which was one of their first movies, so, like, maybe they didn't have the budget, but also, like, disabled actors aren't getting paid the same amount of money as anybody else.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't see, not that I'm advocating for paying them less, but it does just feel like you probably could have found somebody better to play that role.
Yeah.
If you tried.
I know it's a funny one too. Yeah. Cause I obviously noticed, mm-hmm. of course, right away, but because we are coming from growing up in a decade of many, many, many actors who are not disabled playing disabled people, mm-hmm. in a very offensive and overt and
right.
and in a way with no complexity,
yeah,
or
like
depth.
incredibly offensive.
Yeah.
Like his at least is subtle.
Yeah. So in that way, like it wasn't at the forefront of my mind, mm-hmm. as much as it was when I look back,
yeah, totally.
On other movies.
Yeah.
I don't think that makes it necessarily the right thing to do,
yeah.
but I did want to ask you how you,
yeah.
felt about it, because it's an interesting choice.
Totally. It's funny because it's something that I kind of forget about that movie when I'm like, oh yeah, Good Time,
right?
Like that's a great movie, but like I always forget that part of it, that yeah, it's Benny Safdie playing that role, and it's like,
yeah, because he's not in a lot of it too.
No, like, it's, yeah, totally.
But and you know, it's he's not very verbal,
mm-hmm.
so you know, a lot of it is him not speaking,
yeah.
anyways.
It's interesting. It is something that I should probably do some more reading about to like see what like the disabled community feels about,
exactly.
that, which obviously like disability is not a monolith. There's like many different kinds of disabilities also.
Yeah.
So it is, it's an interesting question. I mean, like, I think I'm seeing a lot more these days about that kind of question of like who is not necessarily allowed, because everyone will always be allowed to play whatever role they want, because that's,
yeah.
kind of the world that we live in. But like who is best suited to perform a particular role,
yeah.
and like I think about that a lot because I see it with, this is like totally different, but you know, people questioning whether we should still have child actors now that we have like the technology to not have child actors, kind of, even though I'm not into like CGI children. That's not what I'm advocating,
yeah,
for.
Yeah, I was like, what do you,
I would
mean
never
technology?
But like I see that debate come up a lot because Hollywood is so destructive to children, and like obviously there are ways to employ a child and not abuse them.
Well, that's like, what it comes down to, right?
Yeah.
Is I'm like, this seems like it's not a problem with children being allowed to be actors. It's like a problem with the system they work in,
right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, also part of the same system of like, yeah, hiring people who are ill-suited to perform a role,
yeah,
and then like, you know, for whatever reason, either because like they're a big name so you can get their name on the poster,
mm-hmm.
or you know, it feels like, it's an acting stretch to play somebody who comes from a background that's not my own.
Yeah.
And like, totally, there is, honestly, like, there's a lot of nuance there because there's many different kinds of backgrounds. And like, where do you draw the line for,
yeah.
where some, like, what somebody's allowed to play? I don't know. It's just,
it is a fascinating,
it's an interesting
conversation.
Problem. Yeah.
It is a fascinating conversation. Yeah. I mean, even somebody who like identifies with a different gender or sexuality,
mm-hmm. yeah,
playing
totally.
playing someone that they don't identify,
right.
with. It's very interesting,
yeah,
to think about.
It's interesting to think about.
We don't have the answer.
We
here.
Don't. I see. That's why. Like the child actors thing is obviously a little bit different, but I see that coming up in the same context.
Yeah.
Of like, who do we? Not like who do we allow to act, but like how do we support people, and like how do we choose who plays what role,
yeah.
like what are, yeah, I don't know, like what are the limits that we can ask somebody to extend themselves past,
yeah,
I don't know, there's
exactly.
there's a lot to think about there,
and like who are we denying,
right, right,
work,
the opportunity,
yeah,
to act,
an opportunity when we choose to hire somebody else,
right, when it's like there are plenty of disabled actors who,
yeah.
like could be doing that role,
yeah,
you know, something to think about.
Fascinating. But it did not take, I will say, and this is just a very personal opinion,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure not held by others, but it didn't take away from,
mm-hmm.
the movie for me at all. Good Time was incredible.
Yeah,
it's streaming
movie.
On HBO Max.
Nice.
Yeah it was great. Well,
this has been
has been dim the lights with
Jenny
and Amanda.
Who am I?
Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you have a lovely evening, and we will see you at the end of the month.
In just 2 weeks. More weeks. We'll be back, baby.
We'll be back, and then we'll be taking a little break, but we'll be back in the later spring.
Yeah. In May. You'll see us again in May.
Yep. Thank you so much. Sweet dreams.
Bye.